Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Agustin Madala, and you're listening to Sorry Partner.
Hello, and welcome to Sorry Partner, a podcast about bridge and all things interesting to bridge players. Brought to you by bridge partners and friends, Catherine Harris and Jocelyn Starts. On today's program, we talk with Argentinian champion Agustin Madala about playing on autopilot, the addictive nature of the game, and the way his partner's upbeat temperament keeps him cool under pressure. Plus, he shares his top tip for developing players. But first, let's kibitz. Hi, partner.
Hi, partner. How are you, Catherine?
Jocelyn, I'm really well. How are you?
I'm fine. What's been happening?
Funny you should ask. No, I've been dying to talk to you about this because I played at a tournament last weekend and this thing happened and oh my God. Okay. So you know how we do that thing where if we've got length in the opponent's suit, we might lead away from an ace? Basically, we defend like
right.
No trump.
Right. We pretend it's a no trump and we figure out what we would lead against no trump and then we can
exactly.
Do the same thing.
Exactly. So these people were in a cold four spades contract. That's fine. But I actually had four spades and I had an outside ace four times, right? And I thought, fine, I'm just going to lead away from the ace. It was completely immaterial. They made their contract. It was a flat board. It just didn't matter. Blah, 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 blah. The day goes on, the competition's over, you know, people are mingling, hanging around afterwards, there are a few drinks and snacks, what have you. And this guy, the guy who'd been the dummy in this four stage board, makes a point of coming over to me and is like laughing before he even gets there. You know, I can see him face beaming approaching me. And it's just determined to tell me what an idiotic lead this lead was. Like just laughing in my face. And, you know, I did not know what to do with myself. I just felt gobsmacked. I don't know. No, let me rephrase. I think I do. I think he thought he was flirting with me, to be perfectly honest.
I'm sure he did. I'm sure that's his way. That's his game. And it's not very good.
I was just so stunned that he'd have the gall to his. He obviously was both flirting but also thought I was a complete idiot. So I was wanting to make sure that I understood that he thought I was a complete idiot, but at the same time that I'd somehow find this was cute, him pointing this out to me. So he's just going for it. And, you know, at this point, I don't even know what to say to the guy. I'm not going to get into an argument with him. I don't think it's any of his business. He's certainly given up any right to have a sensible discussion about it, which is clearly not really what he wanted anyway. I don't know if he's been reading something about negging women. You know, that thing, that trend a few by the misogynists a few years ago where men were being encouraged to insult women as a way of somehow being attractive to them or something. I don't know. I don't know what he thought he was going to achieve with this. But anyway, there you go.
Well, you know, it is interesting. We get very odd reactions. You'll remember, I think we've talked about it on the podcast, the time that somebody called the director on you on an online game when you underled your ace. And it was just insane. They called the director. They were convinced that we were cheating. Yeah. Because like, how did you know to underlead your ace to my king or whatever that helped defeat the contract? And, you know, it's just, so for our listeners, just so you know, we will underlead an ace.
Yes.
If we're long in the Trump suit
yes.
that our opponents have contracted for.
And sometimes it's very effective and sometimes it's not. And sometimes it's neither here nor there.
But it seems to provoke a very strong reaction no matter what.
Reaction it provoked both in my opponent and in my reaction to him.
Well, yeah. Be forewarned.
Yeah. And then do me a favor and don't come and tell me about it later.
Yeah, no.
And now it's time for Club Quell.
Club in the Spotlight.
This is Stuart Showalter from the Burlington Bridge Club in Vermont in the United States. I recently moved here from San Diego, California, some 3,000 miles away, to be near my family. When I moved into my apartment, which my daughter had chosen for me because I had never been to Vermont before, I was thrilled to learn that the Bridge Club is just half a mile away. Vermont is the second smallest state in the United States by population, so we are, of course, a rather small club, but we do some big things. We are sanctioned by the American Contract Bridge League. We host 3 sectional tournaments each year, plus a special tournament for non-life masters. And we participate in the annual Longest Day event to raise money for the Alzheimer's Association, ACBL's charity partner. We also have regular lessons for beginning and intermediate players, and we publish a monthly newsletter and weekly problem quiz. The club holds 6 games each week. We also offer 2 open games on BBO. Our in-person games generally have 6 to 8 tables, sometimes more. Our sectionals are larger, of course, drawing players not only from Vermont, but also from the neighboring states of New Hampshire, Massachusetts, and New York. We even get a few who drive down from Canada. As an introvert, I feel blessed to have such a warm and welcoming group of bridge players within walking distance of my home. It brings out my hidden extrovert side. All visitors are welcome, so if you're ever in the New England area of the United States, we hope you will take time to stop by the Burlington Bridge Club, Williston, Vermont.
So come on down. Email us if you'd like to quell about your club. Club in the Spotlight. I'm quelling.
Three letters today, Jocelyn.
3. Wow.
And the first one is from Mitch on the theme of mentorship. Hi, ladies. I recently started listening to your podcasts. I particularly enjoy listening to stories about mishaps at the bridge table.
Don't we all?
Here is one of mine from a recent game with a player that I mentor. We were at our local club. There were only 3.5 tables and we started with a 4-board sit out. We decided to use the time to practice bidding with the sit-out boards. Very good. On the 3rd board, partner opened 1 no trump. With 5 hearts and 6 high card points, I transferred to hearts. He responded 2 no trump, forgetting my bid was a transfer. Wasn't a systematic bid or anything. We agreed it was nice to get this mistake out of our system before we faced real opponents.
True, true.
Then, on the 2nd board in the next round, so this was after the sit-out, partner opened 2 no trump. With 8 high card points and 5 hearts, I bid 3 diamonds to transfer to hearts. Partner promptly bid 3 no trump, again missing the transfer. Again, missing the transfer. No surprise, Hearts played much better and we got a bottom. Several hands later, partner opened one no trump again, holding six diamonds. No. Several hands later, partner opened one no trump again, holding six diamonds to the ace king, two small doubletons in the majors, and 10 high card points. I thought to myself, today is not a good day for transfers. I decided to simplify matters and bid five diamonds to play. Partner paused. I could see the wheels turning as he asked himself, was my bid a transfer? And then came down the five hearts. I doubt I hid my dismay sufficiently as I slapped down the six diamond card. I was off, of course. Five diamonds was the only makeable game. Three director calls later for two revokes with penalties and an insufficient bid by partner, and the torture ended. Not the best day at the table for either of us, but next time I think partner will remember when my bid is or isn't a transfer. Oh, Mitch, but you know what they say, you shouldn't try and rescue your partner.
But he's the mentor. Isn't that part of the job? Maybe. No, maybe not. Oh, my goodness. But, I mean, it all sounded like it started bad when you have a sit out in the first round. I mean, that's always horrible. If you put it to good use.
Yeah. Do you know, I think I have a different attitude to sit outs. It seems, maybe we don't want to do this, but I don't find sit outs such a big deal. I just think, well, yeah, but sometimes they just haven't. You know what it is? It's because I have been sent home from clubs because the numbers don't add up when a sit out could have managed. And I just think, oh, come on, people. Okay. There's not enough people here today. You don't want a howl movement. You're going to carry on no matter what. Just have a sit out. Like, what's the drama?
Right.
That's my attitude.
Totally get it. You're right. I don't know what I'm complaining about. Never mind. I love them. They're an opportunity to practice bidding and get your kinks out of your systems. Thanks, Mitch.
And that's yet another reason why you're my favorite partner, Jocelyn. Flexible. Thanks, partner. I appreciate you doing it through, 180 there on on that position. Thank you very much. Our next letter is from Mojo, and Mojo is writing to us about robot tournaments. He says, robot tournaments are a fine way to practice strong hand bidding since you're always given the hand with the highest point count. I was dealt a balanced hand with 26 or so high card points. You'll like this, Jocelyn. I happen to know that on the robot convention card, this hand was described as a 3-no trump opening bid rather right. than gambling or anything else. So I opened 3-no trump. My robot partner bid 7-no trump and right-hand opponent doubled. After the lead, I saw that I was off an ace, naturally, but left-hand opponent hadn't led that suit and I ran off 13 tricks. Yes, it turned out to be a really good board because most of the other players were down one in 7-no trump doubled because they'd opened two clubs and so it had gone two clubs, two diamonds, and then there'd been a double for a lead on the two diamonds, 3-no trump, 7-no trump, yes. And so then they were all the others were off. So basically if you knew the convention card and knew that the robots opened 3-no trump in that sequence, you were good. So that's
yeah, I've noticed that too. And it is fun to practice bidding strong hands. Sometimes I find that when I've been playing with the robots a lot and then I go and play in a regular game, it's like, what are these crap 8-point hands? What do I do with this? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a little spoiled.
Yeah. But some of those bids are less than, I was going to say standard, but I don't mean to confuse the systems. But they're, you know, not always the way that most people tend to bid those hands.
Right. No, this is very true.
Yeah.
It does help to know the BBO bidding system.
Right.
For sure.
And our final letter today, Jocelyn, is from Bill. Hi, Catherine and Jocelyn. I was asked to fill in for two hands in a teaching game. My partner was ready to open 1-no trump when the teacher suggested she reconsider. She put down the one heart card instead, and I proudly announced 15 to 17. Regards, Bill.
That's very cute. That reminds me of that letter that we read out a few months ago where the husband knew exactly what the wife had and so announced it based on the wife having passed. She's got a balanced 11 count or something. I forget what it was, but it was really cute also.
Yeah.
That's great. So if you have any fun stories about transfers gone awry or something interesting or unusual that happened when playing with robots, please do send them to us at sorrypartnerpodcast@gmail.com. You can find all of our contact information on our website at sorrypartner.com, along with some other good stuff.
Coming up next, our interview with Agustin Madala.
Argentinian champion Agustin Madala's intuitive flair and extraordinary card play have earned him the nickname The Magician. He started playing chess at 3, but shifted to bridge at 8 when chess became a little boring. He won his first South American championship at 14 and competed for his first Bermuda Bowl at 15. He has won the IOC Grand Prix, the European Teams Championship, 5 European Champion Cups, 2 World Championships, and the European Winter Games. We began by asking if he'd had any interesting hands lately.
There are always interesting hands, but I haven't played bridge for the past 2 months, so there's nothing lately.
Okay, so you've been at home, and I know there's been some stuff going on, but how has it been not playing bridge for a couple of months? What's that like for someone like you?
Yeah, well, for me, it's more or less how my life goes. I used to play a lot of bridge. Like when I started, I went to Italy. Well, it's already 18 years ago. That's a lot of time. And I used to play 9 months a year or something. But, you know, the past years, I've been playing 8-9 tournaments a year only, not more than that.
And is that your choice, to play fewer tournaments?
Yes. Well, I mean, I could clearly play more. I really enjoy being at home. So I always prefer to spend time at home with my daughter and my family and my friends, my dad, my brother.
And your game doesn't suffer when you're not playing as often?
Not really, no. I mean, I guess I think so. Maybe if you ask anyone else, I would say yes, but no, not really. No. I never really trained a lot. It's more like, there are some players, some bridge players that they need. I mean, in any sport, it's the same. Like in tennis, it will be exactly the same. Some players are like natural players. Some players are like effort players. Like they need to think everything and work and train. And for me, it's more like I'm more like natural player. And so it doesn't sound good. I don't need to train and I don't need to play, but it's more like a natural thing. I always say that whenever we play a long tournament, like a national or a world championships or whatever, to have a very good autopilot like I have, it makes you have the time to think in the important hands. So some players don't have this autopilot so good, so they really have to think a lot and they waste a lot of time. And by the end of the tournament, they are tired or they make ridiculous mistakes because their brain is collapsing. So this is why I consider myself like a natural guy who can play most of the hands in this autopilot. So that's why I don't need to be playing all the time or training.
Are you playing online during that period at all, or are you really not playing at all?
No.
You're not playing at all?
No, I mean, I never liked playing online. I just played online when we couldn't do anything else. It was all 2020, and part of 2021. And I never thought like it was a real thing for a competition, the online bridge. So I think I like it a lot for people to play, to enjoy, to play like casual games and this, but maybe for playing a serious competition as we were playing nationals and or South Americans or Brazilian championship, I try to play it as less as possible.
I was interested in the same question. I also was wondering whether you read any bridge books during your off time.
Not really, no. I used to read some books when I was little. I was a very big reader, and I don't read that much these days. I love to read. I love to read. But my dad had a lot of bridge books, so but I read that all that books by the time I was 8 or 9 or something. So I guess I never read any other bridge book from there.
Do any of them stand out even today? Which ones do you think of off the top of your head?
Yeah, I mean, I really liked Bridge in a Menagerie. It was, as I tell you, I mean, I'm 37 now, and I probably read it like almost 30 years ago. But I do remember it was fun. I had the chance to revisit some of the stories because my dad was writing articles on the newspaper in Argentina, and he now and then he would publish some interesting hand from that book.
You're regarded as a bridge prodigy. You took to the game very young and were very, very successful very quickly. And you've talked about having this autopilot skill. Do you get impatient around people who don't have that? Like even very good players who you see taking a lot of time. Is it okay with you or does it agitate you?
Yes, I do get impatient. Yeah, it's very difficult for me to play with a slow partner. My actual partner, Dennis Bilde, is a very fast player. But whenever I play with someone that it's slow or against someone, I do get a little impatient. But this is a bad thing for me. I have to admit that. I mean, it's my fault. It's not anyone else's fault. It's just like a lot of times, like I think that they are wasting time. Mm. And I do think that there are some players who do play slow against me because they know I get impatient.
I'm just fascinated. You've been blessed with these skills that make you see the world differently to many, many people. I mean, obviously, we all see the world differently, but you have an ability to see what's going on at the bridge table in a way that many people don't. And of course, this is your reality. So that's just what you see. But do you have an understanding and an awareness that you maybe see a couple of layers deeper than most people tend to see?
It's like being good at bridge. It's just, it's like being good at maths or being good at physics or anything. It's just something that you might be good, but it doesn't really mean that I'm good at maths or good at anything. I mean, you need some maths to calculate some percentages at bridge, and you need but it's something that is specific. It's amazing that I found it and I started so early, but it has an explanation. We can go to that.
Go to that. What's the explanation?
Yeah, so the story is like this. So the old generation of bridge players from Argentina, that includes my dad, they were chess players. At the chess club where everyone was playing, they introduced a wing of bridge, and they all started to play bridge. So and they became the very good generation of bridge players from Argentina. I did exactly the same. But I started playing chess when I was 3. And I played for like 4 or 5 years till I got bored of chess. It wasn't really funny because I was never really amazing at chess, but I was better than the other 8-year-old kids. So I was getting a little bored. So I kind of came back from the chess school one day and I asked my dad, I said, can we do something more interesting than this. And then we started with bridge. And my dad did something very good at the time that it wasn't, nobody was doing it. We were lucky to be four at home. So my mom, my dad, and me and my brother. And we just played cards for a year. We never knew that the ace was four, the king was three, the queen was... We didn't know about trump suit or anything. We just played cards. So by the time we introduced the bidding, we were already very good card players. When I played my first tournament with him at the club, I was claiming with five or six tricks to go. And obviously the people I was playing against, they were laughing at me like, this can't be possible. But I was very good bridge card player. We didn't know how to bid.
That's phenomenal.
It was actually a very smart move by him, because maybe there's a lot of people who starts with like the points and this, and then they just give interest to know that you have 13, 15, or 16 points. We learned how to value our cards somehow. I mean, this was his idea. I know that there's some places they teach like this now, yeah. Maybe not one mm-hmm. year, but we did one full year of playing chess cards at home. Not every day, but we played a lot.
I think also, especially teaching kids, this is considered the best way, is just get them playing and not worry about the bidding so much.
Exactly. Because so you like when you are small, you like to play cards, this, and it's funny, and you like to win the tricks, and you know, and start to, then you, we started playing with partnership, so you start to know that you don't always need to put the biggest card. Sometimes your partner is there to help. So it's you know, it's very slow to learn, but I think it was a great move by him.
And now for a short break.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
And we're back.
And remember, if you don't like the ads, you can sign up for ad-free episodes on our website.
I wanted to follow up on the autopilot aspect of your game. Are you able to identify what it is that comes automatically? So for example, are you able to get a visual picture of all the hands pretty automatically? Is that what happens without your having to think about it as much as other people need to think about it? And also, what makes a hand then difficult for you when you the hands that you're glad you saved your energy so that you can really think hard about those particular hands during a long tournament?
I think, I mean, I cannot really say on a specific reason of why I have my autopilot is better than the other, or like recognize why or which hands I play in autopilot. It's like an automatic thing, really. It's like whenever my mind presents some trouble, it usually comes to situations like a competitive bidding at a high level, 5-5, 6-5. So I have to think and I have to analyze the bidding. Or it comes with an interesting card play, like when trumps are not breaking and you have to find the 100% line to win, or you have to think about the bidding. I mean, I think I mostly think on defense, because it's also has, I mean, you have to think, and you have to think what your partner is going to think from his side. So that is the most interesting part of the game. But I would say, I have no idea which is the percentage, but I would say like maybe 80% of the hands should be not a lot of thinking. It's pretty much going like with the wind. You just value your hand, you beat, you play, you lead your longest suit, the smallest card of your longest suit. Then you like your partner, you make a signal, and then you go to the next board.
It's just easy. It's easy.
It's so easy.
Exactly, exactly. But, you know, it's something that I value a lot. Because I've been around a lot and I've seen a lot of bridge players. And I played with some players that needed to think a lot. And for example, and this is a case, a real case, and it's, and we talk about it. I was playing with my partner in the Lavazza team, and he's from Argentina. He's a very good friend of mine. And we talk about this. We were playing a very difficult system, and he was thinking and thinking. Every time the system was coming, he was taking 5 minutes to not make a mistake on the system. So by the end of the round, of the end of the day, he was completely destroyed. So we talked together and say this has to be different. I mean, you need to play more relaxed. And so we just went back to play absolutely natural system, no conventions, stamen, transfers, and key card, and that was all. And we played like our best championships came from when we decided that to be as natural as we could.
How much of your game is dependent on really knowing how each other thinks, so that you can make a play and you can trust that your partner will understand your intention?
Well, this is very important. I mean, the good partnerships, you need to know your partner, and your partner need to know how you work, how your brain work, how you think. Most of the good pairs, they come from like a player who is, he takes more risks, and his partner is playing more standard bridge and like a passive at the table. And it's very important that you know that your partner is going to take the risk, because otherwise you need to take the risk.
But do you basically barter for this beforehand? Do you discuss it beforehand, or is it just come about because you get to know each other as you play? Like, how much is about the decision?
Yeah, it's more or less when you start playing, you see how it goes. I mean, you see how it goes, you see how your partner thinks, what risks he takes. And and for example, my partnership now with Dennis Bilde, he takes more risks. But in the past, I used to be the one who I'm getting old. So this is my problem now.
You used to be a wild thing, and now
exactly.
He's the wild
I used
thing.
To be a junior player. But you know, it's perfection. It's always in the middle of that. You need to be both players, either aggressive, or I think Dennis is more aggressive, but he also knows when to stay calm, and I am calm, but I also know or try to use my aggressive part of the game whenever we need it. So, you know, it's all it's a mix of emotions at the table. I mean, sometimes you feel it at the table. You feel that your partner is not taking the move, so you take it. No, but it's not something that you talk like before a round and you say, okay, this round you're going to be more aggressive or no. It's something more permanent. It's like something that it's in the air. You feel it.
August, I'm sure our listeners are really delighted to know how relaxed you always are at the table. But is there anything at all that makes you nervous at the table?
Well, as one of the questions before, I mean, slow play is something that makes me very, very nervous. But, you know, as I'm getting old, I'm getting a little better with that. And obviously, whenever I play any final or semifinal of an important tournament, I do feel something. I mean, this is normal. And it's normal not to play so good. It's normal to make some mistakes. It's normal to feel the pressure. I think it's in everyone. But there's not, other than slow play, there's nothing else that makes me nervous so much.
Can I just clarify about the slow play? Nervous or annoyed?
Well, maybe a little bit of both. I do get annoyed, but I also get nervous. Yeah, I get very impatient, very impatient, very impatient. So I can play worst because of that. I mean, it happened before.
So is that the thing that makes you nervous, is that you know that it might affect your temperament and you'll start to get frustrated and play worse?
Exactly. That's why I told you that some players play slower against me, because they do know that I'm not that good.
Do you express your impatience at the table with a slow player?
Well, whenever it's too much. I mean, if it's normal and it's slow, they must just see it in my face, but I won't say really anything. It happened to us once that we had like 9 boards to play in 22 minutes, and we didn't think any hat. So then you feel like, you know, I need my time and I don't have it anymore. So that time, for example, I was pretty clear. I wasn't having fun at all. But otherwise, you can see in my face or in my movements that I'm not happy with the tempo. But it's very odd that I would say something.
Now that you're becoming such a senior figure in the bridge world, in your dotage. How have you learned to manage your negative feelings at the table? How have you got better at keeping your composure?
You learn from everything. Well, you know, I've been playing bridge for 28 years already. So I did play some important stages and some long tournaments and everything. So I would say mostly everything that could happen to me at the bridge table already happened. So, you know, you learn from the situations you live. You learn from sometimes you got annoyed and you make mistakes, and then you say, okay, don't get annoyed. It's a learning process. But through the years, I think I can manage the frustrations better. Sometimes there are some players that when they have a bad hand, bad board, they can play 4 or 5 more words, not playing their best. You know, for me now, I know that in every match there's going to be some bad words. There's one only thing that I don't stand. I get very bad. That it's losing part score doubled. This thing makes me so I can play the next hand very happy of going for 1700. I find very difficult to play well after a minus 470.
This is because you doubled the opponents in
exactly.
A part score and they make it. Okay.
And they made it. Yeah, I hate to double. Yeah. Whenever I double, I like to cash at least 2 or 3 downs on the top, because I know that this 470 could ruin my next 10 boards. But it ruins my feeling at the table. I'm not feel like I play bad, but I clearly play bad. I'm sure I play bad because I am just so annoyed about the thing of the par score double that I can go. If I go for 800 or 1100 or whatever, I mean, it's a hand. Who cares? But the par scores, I don't have too well still.
When you're brooding at the table and cross with yourself about what's happened, does your partner get annoyed with you? How does your partner manage you?
Well, my partner is the happiest man in the history of bridge. You cannot play with someone like this. So I am temperament. I like to speak at the table. I'm very Italian in that way. The first tournament I played with Dennis, we were not playing together at all. It was our first time in Italy, and we were playing with different partners. And we decided before the tournament we were playing together. So we played together. We played no conventions like this, just natural bridge. And we won the tournament. That was pretty amazing. But at one point of the semifinal, it was a very, very close match. And I make a choice of games to Dennis. So he has to choose between four spades and three no trumps. Okay? And he chooses 3-0. And he goes down 4. Vulnerable, so minus 400. And 4 spades is called from the top. 620 called. And it's a very, very close match. We won by 1 this match. And so I go under the screen to say something, to scream at him, to say, why do you... And I see the biggest smile in the world. It was like a baby with an ice cream. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable.
So you peek just under the screen and there...
Exactly. I went under the screen and I say... And then I see nothing. I see a baby with an ice cream. And he was like, okay. I didn't say a word. I said nothing. At the end of the round, I say, how could you do that? I mean, if I take the bad decision, I will be pissed. My face will be horrible. But he was so calm. And he is... He's been always like that. This was like 6 or 7 years ago, and he's been like that, like this all the time. So this also helped me a lot to be a better partner and a better bridge player, for sure.
August, do you have a favorite tournament that you really love to play?
Yeah, I have a couple of tournaments I like to play. My favorite tournament is the Open South American Championships. It's like a trial for the Bermuda Bowl. So it qualifies just one team for country, and it qualifies for the Bermuda Bowl. And the next year, you have this open championship. Like you have many teams from Brazil, Argentina. At the time, it was just for South America. Now it goes transnationals. It's open for the world, and all the people is coming to the tournament. So it's even funnier. But at the time, when I was 16... 18. It was so fun to be with all the South American people once every 2 years in these nice locations, maybe sometimes by the sea, like in Cartagena, Colombia. And really, like the tournament goes to a second place. You just spend the nights with friends that you see one time every one or two years. And you drink and chat and talk about bridge stories. And for sure, that's the tournament I like more to play every year.
You said there were a couple?
Yeah, well, I love to play. There are some places in the world that I love to go, like a Biarritz tournament. It's a festival in France that is very nice. I've been there for, I think, 16 or 17 years in a row. I missed last year, but so I love there. I like to go to Spain for dinner. And obviously, I do like to play like Bermuda Bowl or Olympiads. But this is more like a serious bridge that I like. In the tournaments, my first thought when you asked the question was to think about the tournaments. I go there with a smile. I get to that tournament with a smile, and I go back home with a smile. Usually at the World Championships, I go with a very serious face, and I go back almost crying. So, so it's not so good.
What is the funniest thing that's ever happened to you when you were playing bridge?
That's a very interesting question. I can tell you this story is really amazing. So we had two boards in the same round against the same pairs. That it seems to be really a joke. So the first one, they opened two no trumps showing both minors and a weak hand. And it went past three clubs, pass to my partner. So we agreed that whenever they showed two suits and this situation was coming, double from his side was a visual thing. So if I have more than two cards, it was a takeout double. If I had less than two cards, it was penalty. Okay? So I had stiff ace of clubs, so I passed. I led the ace of clubs, and that was the only trick we made. So my partner, so the dummy came down with seven small clubs, five small diamonds, and stiff ace on one major. And his partner had king jack fourth of clubs, void in diamonds, and ace king on the other major. So they were called for six clubs. We got three clubs doubles minus 1270. And we won 7 points to six clubs double 1540 on their table. So our disaster was plus seven for us.
Wow.
And this was on the very same match. And we won by very few imps. I think it was quarterfinals of a national. And my partner, they get to six hearts double. My partner has one no trump opening. So he somehow decides to underlead ace queen third of hearts. So he leads small hearts. And it's the only way to let the contract make. Because otherwise, the dummy, he can't go twice to his hand. But we still don't know what happened. At one point, the guy who was playing the hand, he has all the tricks are his, but he plays a card and I win the trick. And then I look at him and I say, okay, what's going on? And so we go and we check, and everybody has four cards and he has three. Okay, so he, at one point of the hand, he played two cards at the same time, and no one noticed. I mean, it was unbelievable. And he went down in six hearts double when he was absolutely, absolutely cold. Yeah, and it was the same match.
What's the ruling in a situation like that?
His fault.
I mean, he conceded the trick at one point, and when we took his cards from the board, he had all 13 cards. Mm. So he at some point, he played the card. I have no idea what the rules. I know that the director came to the table, and we were playing against a very big guy. That was not the guy who had the problem. It was his partner. So his partner got very, very nervous. And he started trying to fight with me. And I said, okay, no worries. There is no any chance I'm going to fight with you. So it's like there's no chance. I mean, you're like 195. I am 172. It's just no chance. So it's
why was he going to fight you? That makes no sense.
Because you know, people don't like to get a horrible result, and this was a very strange. I mean, obviously they wanted the director to rule that six hearts double was making, but he actually went down.
Yeah.
It was crazy because there was a little spice on the situation that. So, my partner promised 15 points, and I knew that if he had 15 points, he couldn't make the contract because he needed to have king queen of spades, so there was no chance. So the guy started thinking, and I told the guy, I said, I don't think you're going to make this one. Okay. And then this happened. So it was like, okay, he didn't make. I mean, I thought was correct. I mean, he went down. But it was an accident. He played two cards at the same time. I mean,
it's, so they were stuck together. Is that the idea?
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Got it.
So it was pretty crazy.
And you didn't have to go to hospital.
No. But very close.
What is the most unexpected place where you've played bridge?
Well, when we were young, we used to play everywhere we could. So certainly we played at every airport and every train station, and we were playing every kind of card games all the time. So I do have a couple of friends who actually were seated at the gate, and they missed the flights while playing cards. They went to all the group 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 9, and the plane departed, and they kept playing cards. And they had to take then a car from like New York to Washington D.C. or something because they were not playing.
Doesn't that say it all? Doesn't that just sort of capture how bridge players are so engrossed in this game?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we are like bridge is it's a very addictive game, I would say. That's one of the reasons why I don't actually go on Juana, my daughter, to be a bridge player. I'm not so sure about it. I mean, it has to be her decision. We've been addicted and we played a lot, and your life became, even for people that play at the club, they are thinking of going to the club and play bridge. And this is not only for competitive players. I mean, it's for everyone.
What is something that people might be surprised to know about you?
Well, I was very close to stop playing bridge before I started traveling. I won my first South American Championship in 2001. I was 14. But on the trials for the South Americans, I lost the first stage of the trials by one imp in 96 boards. I was invited by the team who defeated us to play the second stage. And we lost again in 128 boards. We lost by two. And when I went back home, I said, I'm not playing bridge anymore. That's all for me. And then a week from there, the team that was traveling from Argentina, there was a guy who is now a non-player from Argentina. His mother put his passport, his ID, he put it on the laundry machine. And he couldn't travel. He didn't have any other ID at the time. And so the people from the team, they called me and they asked me if I wanted to go. And I was like, I already decided not to.
I quit bridge. I'm not playing bridge.
Exactly. I'm not playing anymore. So I do remember the phone call. And I said, okay, yeah, I would love to go, but I have to ask my dad. And they said, okay, no, we already asked your dad. And he said, it's fine. And that was the first time I traveled by myself. And I was 14 when we won the South American Championships.
Do you have a favorite bridge convention or gadget?
I do. Yeah, I would say Gatsili.
We're big fans.
I think it is one of the things that changed a system. It really changed the system. It gives some space, and it's good to work on. It's a convention that is very good to work on. Like when I started my partnership many years ago, we spent maybe 10 hours working only on Gatsili and to make it perfect to show all the hands. The two-letter opening to clubs or to diamonds showing 18, 19 balanced. These are the two conventions I like most.
Is there a bridge convention that you really hate?
I do, yes. I hate Flannery. I would say hate. I would say I really dislike a Flannery. But hate is a very strong word.
Is that because you really like having two diamonds available for other uses, or?
No. I don't like Flannery because I don't like Flannery at all. I don't like it. It's a convention that it doesn't fit me. I don't know. I have to play Flannery with some of my partners around the world. So I try not to say that to them, but they do know I don't like it.
What is the best bridge tip or advice that you've ever been given or that you can share with our listeners?
My tip would always be, don't really count points. Just look at your cards and see if you like them or not. So that's the way to really upgrade or downgrade. It's like I do it still these days. I see a hand and I see, okay, I like it. Okay, so then I know that I'm going to press a little more. If I don't like it, it's a view thing. It's like I see the cards and I... So that's what I always tell the people. Just look at your cards and value if they are nice cards or not. This could go for every level of bridge.
Agus, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been great talking to you.
Thanks so much.
It's been a pleasure from me. So thank you, Catherine. And thank you, Jocelyn. It was great. It was fun.
And that's the show. Many thanks to our guest, Agustin Modala.
Thank you also to our Sorry Partner posse of listener supporters who make the show possible.
Sorry Partner is produced by Catherine Harris. Our theme music was composed by Jocelyn Starts and produced by Daniel Graboy.
Send your bridge stories and comments to sorrypartnerpodcast@gmail.com or send us a voice message. And please consider supporting the show. Join the Sorry Partner posse, purchase books through our site, explore the merch store. These links and a link to Club Kvel are in your app, on the website at sorrypartner.com, or wherever you like to listen. We'd love to hear from you, but be nice or we'll call the director. Until next time, play well.
May all your finesses be onside. And remember, as August says, forget counting points. Look at your cards and decide if you like them or not. That's the way to evaluate a hand. Thank you, partner.
Thank you, partner.
Bye.
Bye.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.